Radio Prague News. There has been little progress in talks on the formation of a coalition of Civic Democrats, Christian Democrats and Greens. At least 13 people died on Czech roads over the holiday period, and over 100 hardy fellows and ladies took part in an annual swim in the Vltava River in Prague on Stephen's Day. There has been little progress over the holiday period in talks on the formation of a coalition of the Civic Democrats, the Christian Democrats and the Greens. Civic Democrat leader Mirek Topolánek had suggested a coalition deal could be signed on Wednesday, but several sticking points remain. Among them is the Greens' nomination of Karel Schwarzenberg as foreign minister. President Václav Klaus has questioned his suitability because of the aristocrat's ties with Austria. Mr. Schwarzenberg's family fled to Austria in 1948 and he spent 40 years there. However, in an interview for Wednesday's Mladá Fronta Dnes, he firmly rejected suggestions that he holds Austrian citizenship. The three-party alliance is one vote short of a majority in the Chamber of Deputies and would need the support of at least one rebel left-wing MP to pass a confidence vote. The Czech Republic has been without a stable government since elections in June ended in stalemate. At least 13 people died on Czech roads over the Christmas holiday, most of them in the pre-Christmas rush on Friday and Saturday. Over 1,200 accidents were reported on Friday alone. Over 100 so-called otužilci, hardy fellows and ladies, took part in an annual swim in the Vltava River in Prague on Stephen's Day. The water temperature was 6.3 degrees Celsius. Among the swimmers was Ladislav Nicek, who is 93 and was taking part for the 57th time. Iveta Hlavačová, the women's English Channel record holder, was among 24 women who participated. According to a survey conducted by the Mladá Fronta Dnes daily, wages in the Czech Republic are expected to rise by an estimated 5% in 2007, although the rise in real wages should not exceed 2%. The paper polled over 100 large companies, which together employ some 300,000 people. On the other hand, a survey among Czech managers suggests that wage growth in the coming year will be slightly lower than 5%. Trade unions see the projected 5% growth as insufficient. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, why the fuss over Senator Karel Schwarzenberg as nominee for foreign minister? The Czech band Ecstasy of St. Teresa releases a new album, and a new book pays tribute to the late Olga Santova, Radio Prague broadcaster. Last Thursday, Czech President Václav Klaus caused something of a stir when, rather unexpectedly, he refused to appoint a cabinet put forward by Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek in what was the Prime Minister's second attempt to form a viable government. Along with the President's objection that the cabinet was not guaranteed wider political backing, Mr. Klaus also stressed his objection to the nomination of Senator Karel Schwarzenberg for the post of foreign minister. Why? Well, he suggested that Mr. Schwarzenberg, a member of the former Czech-Frankish aristocracy, could be a threat to Czech-Austrian relations. President Václav Klaus.
Even for the reason of very fragile relations with Austria, I find it hard to understand how the Prime Minister could see Mr. Schwarzenberg as appropriate for the post of Foreign Minister.
Not surprisingly, Mr. Klaus's words caused something of a political bombshell, although he is not alone in his opposition to the Schwarzenberg nomination. Others, even within the negotiation leading Civic Democratic Party, also suggested they would favor a different candidate. And already there has been some criticism of Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek for allowing the two smaller parties in the coalition to snag three key ministries, finance, local development, and foreign affairs. One of the Civic Democrats' key negotiators, Pavel Bem.
I'm unhappy that the Civic Democrats have given up the finance ministry, and I'm going to do all I can to see this change.
Meanwhile, Czech TV reported that Mr. Bem also has strong reservations about Mr. Schwarzenberg as nominee. The question of why the senator's name rankles in some top political circles, including the president's, is not an easy one to answer. But the suggestion that he might somehow compromise Czech-Austrian relations, a number of critics have already labeled absurd. Mr. Schwarzenberg himself has even made clear he is not even an Austrian citizen, although he did live in Austria for many decades. He does hold dual Czech-Swiss citizenship. For many here, though, the senator remains a symbol of opposition to totalitarianism, and his political pedigree and commitment to the Czech Republic remain without blemish. His own family lost property to the Nazis, then to the communists, before escaping Czechoslovakia in 1948. Then, in the mid-1980s, Mr. Schwarzenberg was then chairman for the Helsinki Conference for Human Rights, supporting Czechoslovak dissidents. Most recently, former President Václav Havel, a close long-term associate, expressed support for him from New York. And, of course, Mr. Schwarzenberg is continuing to be strongly backed by the party that nominated him, the Greens. Will Mr. Schwarzenberg ultimately take up the post? Well, that will still involve many ifs. Firstly, whether the current agreement is signed as is, as promised sometime this week. Second, if the government will then be appointed without further reservations by the president. Thirdly, if the new government then survives its confidence vote. There, for some, Mr. Schwarzenberg's name could remain a problem. Even now, one Civic Democrat MP has already threatened to withdraw support unless the current proposal is backed by his party's Central Executive Committee, something the Prime Minister has so far refused, saying he has received the party's blessing already. All told, the Czech Republic has perhaps inched somewhat closer to gaining a new government, but it is clear in the coming days that many hurdles still lie ahead. And we turn now from politics to all the latest in sports news, and for that, I'm joined by Ian Willoughby.
Thanks, Jan. Well, while many of us have been overindulging and vegging out over the festive season, it's been go, go, go for many of the Czech Republic's football players. There is now, for the first time, a sizable Czech contingent at Scotland's top clubs. Among them is Libor Sionko, who will have had a merry Christmas after scoring for Glasgow Rangers in their 2-1 win over Aberdeen on the 23rd. On the other side of Scotland's biggest city, Jiří Jarošík lined up for Celtic as they beat Falkirk 1-0. But the blonde midfielder had to be substituted in the 56th minute of Celtic's Boxing Day clash with Dundee, which ended 2-2. Jarošík had this to say on the phone from Scotland.
I was actually injured before the game. Then I took a lot of knocks during the match before I got a bad kick from one of the opposition, for which I needed around 10 stitches. I managed to play until halftime, but not long afterwards I had to go off. I went straight to the changing rooms to get the stitches.
Czech midfielder Jiří Jarošík in the wars. Jarošík, who has been capped 23 times by the Czech Republic, has a most unusual record at club level. The 29-year-old has championship-winning medals from three different leagues. He won the Czech league several times with Sparta Prague, took the Russian league title with CSKA Moscow, and played enough games during a brief spell at Chelsea to earn a Premiership winner's medal. Now, with Celtic 15 points clear in Scotland, Jarošík looks set to make it four leagues, four titles. Goalkeeper Petr Cech, meanwhile, is missing Chelsea's busy Christmas schedule as he continues his recuperation after a bad head injury. Cech took advantage of his layoff to spend a rare Christmas at home in Plzeň, where he said he'd enjoyed carp and potato salad and, of course, TV fairy tales. In an interview with Sport newspaper, the young star said all he'd lacked was snow. Former Czech international goalkeeper Pavel Sernicek played his first full game since his return to Newcastle on Boxing Day, a 2-1 defeat at the hands of Bolton. Sernicek, now 38, spent 7 years at the club during the 1990s. He's hugely popular with Newcastle fans. They call him Pav. Ice hockey goalie Dominik Hašek may be just a month short of his 42nd birthday, but he continues to play at the very highest level. In his most recent game with Detroit Red Wings, Hašek kept out an incredible 34 shots to help his team to a 3-1 win over Minnesota. Detroit coach Mike Babcock said it was the best goaltending performance he's seen in 2 seasons at the club. Finally, tennis, and the Czech Republic will have to face the USA in the first round of the Davis Cup without Radek Štěpánek. Štěpánek had boycotted the Czech team under former coach Cyril Suk, but he had been expected to play under his successor Jaroslav Navratil. Player and coach gave differing accounts to the media about a possible meeting in Prague. That appears to have been the last straw for Štěpánek, who is 28 and ranked 19th in the world. That's all the sport for today.
And my thanks to Ian Willoughby. Ecstasy of St. Teresa are among the most highly respected of Czech rock and pop groups. Formed by producer Jan P. Muchov in the early 1990s, the band went through a number of lineup changes before reaching its current form of Muchov and singer Katarzyna Winterowa, who is also an actress at the National Theatre. 4 years after their last CD, Slow Thinking, Ecstasy of St. Teresa are now back with a new collection, Watching Black. Ian Willoughby discussed the latest album with Jan P. Muchov in his small studio, which is just off Wenceslas Square. My heart goes tick, tick, tick like a bone. Tick, 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 all night long. Tick, tick, tick like a bone.
How does the new album differ from the previous album, Slow Thinking?
From our point of view, it's a different in a way, like we think, we communicate more. The previous one, the Slow Thinking album, was like kind of like introvert and fragile sounding, and this time we wanted to communicate more on the outside and or like about the outside, and in the sound wise we wanted to go a bit more organic sounding, or like, you know, and a bit more dirty, because the previous album we thought maybe was too clinical, you know, like too clean. So now we wanted to feel more of the human touch. Little smile, and I saw
that smile on lips. It's about 4 years since your previous album came out. Why did it take that long?
It's like two parts why it took so long. And the first part is because I think when the record comes out, it's not the end of the life of the record. So we spent like almost a year like touring, promoting the record. We made 3 EPs of the record. We made a DVD version of the record. And then it came out as well in the UK. So we spent as well some time on promoting it there. So that it took almost, and then we played on some of the festivals and stuff. So it took almost 2 years to support the Slow Thinking, the previous album. And then we started to look in front and to work on the newer and on the newer record, and then as well came about the pregnancy of the singer.
Your new single is Watching Black, White Looking, but it's not the most poppy song on the new album. Why did you choose that particular track as a single?
I thought it's like, it's the clear, it makes it clear what the record is about. If we would choose, for example, the song "Where Is the Duet" with Selfbrush, it's maybe more popular and people will maybe enjoy more. But I would think, as a pilot single, it would not tell the truth about the album, you know. So I wanted to make a clear, to show people the clear sign what the record is basically about, you know.
And the sounds of the Ecstasy of St. Teresa take us now to our main special this day, produced by Ian Willoughby, which looks back or remembers Radio Prague broadcaster Olga Santova.
This is the North American broadcast of Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia, and its Magazine of the Air. This is Olga Mala, opening this week's magazine to you.
The unmistakable voice of the late Olga Santova. For many people, for many years, she was the voice of Radio Prague. By the way, Olga Mala was her radio pseudonym. International broadcasters adopting pseudonyms wasn't uncommon under communism. The recording you've just heard was from a specially prepared collage, played recently at the launch of a new book in tribute to Olga. It's in Slovak, Czech and English, and has the Slovak title Nežila som nadarmo, which translates as I didn't live in vain. Radio Prague's former editor-in-chief, David Vaughan, was a good friend of Olga Santova's. At its launch, David explained the thinking behind the new publication.
The book was put together by Olga's husband, Juraj, who they had 30 years of really very devoted marriage, and it was his way of honouring Olga and her past and the things that she'd achieved in her life. Partly, I think, he felt that there had been a lot of injustice in Olga's life because, for example, her father had died after being put in prison in the 1950s by the Stalinist regime of the time. He was a politician, a social democrat politician. And then Olga was thrown out of the radio after the Warsaw Pact invasion in 1968, and for 20 years nearly she couldn't work in radio, which must have been agony for Olga because she was such a natural radio person. And so there was a lot of pain in Olga's life, and there was a lot of injustice, and I think that Juraj wanted to put together something that would really remind people who knew her and even people who didn't know her, of what she'd achieved in her life. So there's a combination of interviews with her, for example. There are people talking about her, memories of her. There are various biographical episodes written by Juraj about her life, because it was a very interesting life. She also lived in Africa for several years, for example.
Olga's life began in Bratislava in 1932. At the age of six, her family had to flee Tiso's Slovakia, escaping to Norway. When that country was occupied by the Nazis, Olga's family fled to Sweden, from where they managed to get to America. It was there she got her first taste of journalism, writing for Hlas Mladieže, the Voice of Youth. It was the magazine of the Slovak National School of New York. Journalism was in her blood. Her father, Denizer Benau, was editor of the New Yorkski Denik newspaper. In 2001, when she retired as a full-timer at Radio Prague, Olga Santova recalled her beginnings in broadcast journalism.
Radio, actually, that came as a coincidence, because when we did come back in 1946, my father was again very active on the political scene and got himself arrested in 1951. So after that, there was no chance of me studying at university. My studies had to be interrupted, and no idea of my getting into any media, into newspaper or radio. I was working in something called the Pioneer House. It was a kind of after-school a center for children, and Jan Dvořák from the American section came there to do an interview, and he discovered that there was somebody there who spoke very good English. So he introduced me to the staff, and it took a terrible long time before I could start working in radio because of my father's political problems.
Olga's career at the radio was interrupted when she spent 4 years in Africa in the 1950s. Her first husband, journalist Miroslav Purchal, was CTK correspondent for Ghana and the whole of English-speaking West Africa. Their marriage finished at the end of the 1960s. The new book, Nejila Asom Nadarmo, has been put together with great love and care by Olga's second husband, Juraj Santo. Mr. Santo is himself Slovak and also a journalist.
It was hard to write the book because I had to deal with the fate of Olga's father. His fate completely shaped the development of Olga's own life and her personality. It was also difficult because I loved Olga very much, and I had to write the book in such a way as not to offend those involved either in the first half of her life or the second. I tried to write it for both relatives and close friends near to Olga, and total strangers.
One episode recounted in Mr. Santo's book is the 1968 crushing of the Prague Spring Movement. Olga was soon afterwards thrown out of the radio, but nevertheless she had some fond memories of that momentous time.
Not of the occupation, but the broadcasting that followed. A group of us managed, thanks to the technicians who helped us, and wouldn't have been possible without them, managed to concentrate in one of the radio buildings outside this main building, and for practically 2 weeks we did broadcast from there the true story of what was going on. So that, I think, was probably the most glorious part of Radio Prague, of my career on it, certainly.
There was a large turnout of former colleagues and old friends for the launch of the new book last week. Among those in attendance was Dora Slaba. She herself worked for Radio Prague's British English service for many years.
We were great friends because we had similar experiences during the war, different backgrounds, but nevertheless, somehow we were on the same wavelength. She also did these light programs. She had a great sense of humor. She was a very good friend, a great person in supporting me when I was in trouble, and vice versa. When she had a problem, I could help her.
I must say, I myself, sometimes when I think about radio work and about communication and the best way to get ideas across to the listener, I think of Olga sometimes. What do you think it was about Olga that made her such a great broadcaster?
I think it was dedication, that she was so interested in what people were doing, and so interested in how to pass on that message to as many people as possible.
And I guess she wasn't afraid of being a bit cheeky sometimes and asking a difficult question.
Not at all, no. That she lived for that, I think. She really enjoyed doing that, and maybe even embarrassing people, especially the politicians.
David Vaughan began working with Olga Santova after her return to Radio Prague in 1990.
I worked with Olga for 12 years. We were colleagues in the English section, and it was really good fun. In the early days when I first started, and then Olga came back, and it was fun because she was so full of energy, and she was also a bridge to the past. Not only did she seem every bit as young as all the young people who were there in their 20s, but she also in some way reminded us of the best of the tradition of Radio Prague before the Soviet invasion. And I just remember how much fun it was. For example, when I got married to my wife, Catherine, Olga turned up. Well, Olga was invited, of course, to the wedding, and she turned up with her microphone, and she recorded the wedding. And the next week, she'd had a program, including extracts from our wedding, about the Anglican community in Prague. And that was typical Olga. She was always able to make a story and to make an entertaining and good story out of something.
The last, I guess, year or more, I suppose, that Olga was working here at Radio Prague, she was quite ill. but she seemed determined to keep working.
Olga had been suffering from cancer for several years, and it had come and gone. And it was, in fact, the reason why she didn't become the, just after the fall of communism, she didn't become the Czechoslovak radio correspondent in the United States. It was a great irony that just after the fall of communism, here was this wonderful opportunity, and she got cancer just at that time. She recovered, and eventually the cancer did come back, and she had chemotherapy on several occasions after that. And she was one of those people that the cancer was there, it was an irritation, and she would not let it defeat her. And she said, right, I'm not feeling well this week, I can't do it this week, I can't come into work, I'll come in next week and I'll do more. And she'd come in and she'd carry on doing her work. And it kept her going, and it was sort of, it was very much, at the time, my own mother was ill with cancer as well, and they became quite good friends because they got to know each other at my wedding. And it was very interesting because my mother had a similar approach to her cancer, that it was something that was an irritation. It got in the way, and sometimes you couldn't do things. But you carry on with your life as you can.
And when she stopped working here full-time, she kept going part-time as if just to keep her, not to keep her oar in, but because she liked it.
I think the very last program she made for Radio Prague was about 3 weeks before she died. And that was when she already knew that she didn't have much time. But she just took it for granted. She was a professional.
Olga Santova passed away in August 2003, but she will live on in the memory of many, family, friends, colleagues, and listeners for a very long time.
That special program on a new book by Juraj Santo, remembering his beloved wife and our colleague here at Radio Prague, Olga Santova, and it was put together by Ian Willoughby. If you remember Olga's work and would like to comment, please do so by writing to english@radio.cz. Hope you enjoyed listening. This is Jan Bellinger saying thanks, and tune in again soon.